Hi, I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic. One of the reasons I love this program is I never met Max, but boy, can I relate to you. So this is awesome. My sobriety date is December 31st, 1993, and by the grace of God, I have not had to take a drink or any other substance since then. Stan asked me to speak, and he told me not to be boring. So I think I'm going to give you the unedited version. So anyway, I was born in New York, I guess you can tell that, into an alcoholic home. My mom was alcoholic, and she was pretty crazy. You know, she drank all day while my father worked, pretty much till the wee hours of the morning. So it was a little scary to live in that house. And what I learned was not to like alcohol and had it like be a caretaker. So no one gave me these roles. No one told me that I had to do this, but I decided that it was my job. For most of my life, I've tortured people because I decided that I know better than everybody. Through that childhood, probably by the time I was 9 or 10, my mother attempted suicide. And she would do that 2 more times. And she was a stay-at-home drinker, you know. She loved to stay home, clean all day, and drink all day while we were in school. And she also did crazy shit, like, you know, you'd come home and we lived in an apartment, so we were all on top of each other. And like the whole house would be painted a different color and the furniture would be moved and you never knew what you were going into. So nothing about it felt really safe. Over the years, I've looked back, like, I think I was born restless, irritable, and discontent. But if I wasn't, I certainly got that way living like this. So I didn't sleep a lot because at night a lot of bad shit happened in my house. So I would stay up because I was afraid of what would happen. I still have some sleeping issues 20 plus years later. But anyway, I don't think I liked to be awake and going, but it was like the illusion of control. So I decided that I'm never going to drink alcohol. It's not for me. It's terrible. When I was 13 about, my mother came home from her third psych. By then, my father had, like, bought a house and moved us. Like, everything was very traumatic. It wasn't like, you know, ease these kids into it. It was like he decided, you know, she needs a change of, change the environment. So he moved us all and thought that might fix her. He later on tried those same tricks with me, but they didn't work. And as you know, they don't work for us. Anyway, when I was 13 and I started high school, it was when I really started to, like, not care so much what went on at home, because by this time, I had to travel a really long distance for school. Like, before, we were in a really small neighborhood and we walked back and forth to school. Anyway, so that began my, like, high school days. And I went to an all-girls Catholic high school. My parents really provided a really good foundation. Not a great home life, but a good foundation. And we couldn't talk about mommy's drinking, so that was off limits. So we just walked around and pretended that everything was great. And so by the time I got to high school, I made friends with all these kids that were not from my little neighborhood. And my best friend for the next 4 years would be this girl named Stoney. Now, I loved that name, and that's what Stoney did. She sat in the back of the class, and she had this long blonde hair, and I'm going back to like the 70s, okay? And this was like when anything you want goes. So it's 1970 when I start high school, and Stoney becomes my best friend, and every morning we meet at the water fountain, because she brings in something that we have to try today. Now, I was petrified of alcohol. I don't know why I wasn't afraid of, like, taking a pill or, you know, whatever Stoney gave me. But she assured me that, oh, you'll be fine. And so that started, you know, my life with mood-altering substances. And I think it really was like, wow, this is cool. Like, because up to that point, all I did was like, my head would never stop. I was always on this like no sleep and just make sure everything is going okay at home. And then, you know, I was like on speed all the time, but that was my natural state. I'm gonna go back. My mother said that I was crazy, because I had radiation treatments when I was a kid in like the late 50s when it was experimental. And so I could never sit still. So I know I was always restless. And she would say, you're effing crazy. It's from that radiation. And so for the rest of my life, I said, that's my problem. It's the radiation. And later on, it would play a big role in me, like, not thinking that alcohol and other things had anything to do with my problem. I was crazy because I had radiation. So for the next 4 years, I showed up. And now I had no parental supervision. I just was a good kid. I went home when all my friends had curfews. Nobody gave me a curfew. I used to ask my mother, why don't I have a curfew? Why don't you ever ground me? You know, I never got punished for anything. I never, because she was too busy. You know, as alcoholics, we're pretty busy. So she would clean the house and take care of the outside stuff for us kids, but the other stuff did not come. So for the next 3.5 years, I was a really good kid. I was taking whatever I could, whenever I could. And then when I was like 15, I started dating a boy in the neighborhood who drank like a six-pack of beer every day. And like all those, they were my Irish friends. They all liked to drink beer. And I didn't like that. So, but through them, I had my first taste of alcohol. And I'll never forget it. We were in the alleyway on my block, and they brought a couple of bottles of Boone's Farm apple wine. So if you're my age, you know what that is. And we just passed it around. You know, it was like you pass a joint around. They passed the bottle around, and I was like, what is the big deal with this? Like, I don't get it. And I think it's because I loved the effect that I got from anything that I could ingest, and it had to be quick. I didn't want to wait, so Boone's Farm apple wine just took way too long. Anyway, so that was my first taste of alcohol, and I wasn't crazy about it. I got out of high school by the skin of my teeth, And it was the first time I ever told a lie. And I'm serious about that. I up until that point, never lied. But I had a lot of guilt about it, too. But when I was 17, I'm in senior year, and my mom decided to... I was about 17 and a half. She decided to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and stop drinking, and she did. And then, 6 months later, was diagnosed with cancer. So I decided that God sucked. I was raised Catholic. I used to hang out with the nuns and in the convent. I was always looking for some kind of spiritual safety. And then I decided, okay, God really sucks, because I've been praying for this woman to get sober for all these years. And now she's sober, and now she's got cancer. So I just went like, whew. And that was like the end of my senior year. And the lie was that my mother's got cancer. I was cutting all the time, because I was hanging out in the luncheonette up the block and doing things I wasn't supposed to do. And so I told all the nuns that my mom is sick and I've been really distraught over this. And that was such a lie. I was distraught, but that's not why I wasn't going to school. And so they all gave me makeup work and I graduated. Now, my brother went right off to college. I have an older brother. And my sister, who's younger, went right off to college. But I'm not having any part of that. There is no way I'm going to more school. So I go to work because I'm a grown-up. And I just want to make my own money and run my own life as though I wasn't anyway. You know, have money for booze and all the other stuff. So I went to work in the bank, and that was when I started with it's in Manhattan, 1974, and there was a bar right across the street from the bank, and that's when I started with, like, liquid lunches, they used to call them. So I'd get into work at like 7 in the morning, good worker bee. I was always afraid back then to like break the law, break the rules. So I was always trying to prove something. But then I'd go across the street and have like 3 or 4 martinis and go back to work. And I was working with these women who were seasoned drinkers. And they would say, wow, like, how do you do that? You know, you're so little, and you can have those martinis and go back. And I was just fine. So I started thinking, wow, I can handle my liquor. And back when I tried alcohol for the first time, I wasn't very impressed because I didn't think it did anything for me. So I could have my martinis. So that went on for about 8 years. I always talk about this because it's a huge part of my story. One of the things that I thought I needed, like I needed to have somebody love me. I needed to have a relationship. So I'm a serial relationship person. Like, I don't go out dating. I don't, you know, have one-night stands. I take a hostage, and I torture him for a couple of years, and then I move on to my next one, okay? Now, back then, you couldn't have told me that's what I was doing, but that's what I did. And so that's what I did. Now, all this is so that I can say, you're a good Catholic girl. You're not really that crazy. Look, you have a boyfriend. I cheated on every one of them. I always had the next guy before I dumped this one. So there was nothing like really good about how I behaved, but I always had to be in a relationship. And to me, I know that today I know that that's my spiritual malady. like I've always had this hole inside of me that couldn't be filled. It just couldn't be filled. There was not enough alcohol, there was not enough drugs, there was not a good enough relationship, there was not enough money, there was not enough material stuff to fill this hole. Every time I tried to fill it, and the more I drank and did substances, the bigger the hole grew. So, when I was 21, I was in a relationship with this guy since from when I was 17. And we used to break up, go back together, break up, go back together. I hated his effing guts. I hated him. I did. I hated him. He was a real alcoholic, and I did not like real alcoholics. And at around that age, we were in this like after hours club, because back then in New York, we went to the club and the bar and then the after hours club. And somebody handed me this white powder. And I was like, sure. Now, I had been drinking a lot that night and I was a little drunk. So I didn't care. Sure. Well, that became the love that I would have for the next 15 years. I don't know how I'm alive, but that's one of the miracles. I shouldn't be alive. And if I got everything I deserved, I wouldn't be standing here, okay? Anyway, a couple of years later, I marry that guy because, and this is the truth, I couldn't stay away from him, and I couldn't stay, I mean, I didn't know what to do because we kept breaking up, going back, it was miserable. But just like my alcohol and drugs, same exact thing, I always went back. So that's what I did with him, and so I said, we have to get married. And we did, and he married me, poor guy. A year and a half, I walked out and I said, I have to go think about this marriage. And I went to Miami, and this is in 1982. So if anybody knows what Miami was like in 1982, you can see it on the deadliest decade of the 80s. It's on Investigation Discovery right now. That's where I was. I was in Miami where it was like the worst ever. And I didn't go home for like 13 months. And so here's the story that I told. I told this story until 4 years ago, that I filed for divorce because he's an alcoholic and we just can't get along. And so I went back to New York on the day that I had to sign the papers. I brought this guy with me from Miami who was gonna live with me. It's like crazy. Talk about unmanageability. He stayed like 3 weeks and ran back to Miami. He was the only smart one. And so my divorce was final. But now all this time in Miami, I am partying like nobody's business. And that's when I started like partying around the clock, going home, showering, going to work. In that time, I was living in my father's place, and I would go with him and my dad and his buddies when they were in town, and we'd go to the bar or the restaurant, and I would pound the drinks. Now, by this time, every time I drink, I'm blacking out, every single time. Earlier, when I used to do it, I was fine, but I guess the alcohol was catching up, so I would black out every time. And one time, I woke up in a blackout, walking down A1A, in like, I'm pissed off, and I'm walking in A1A right down the middle, and my father is like chasing me and screaming. And that's how I woke up, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? That was one time. Anyway, so I moved back to New York, and the first week I'm there, I meet the guy who's gonna be my next husband. And he was a dentist, and I thought, this is awesome. Oh my God. So, right after I met him, I wound up in my first treatment center. That's how awesome that was. because everybody up to that point would try to like get me to slow down. Stop doing all those drugs. Stop drinking as much. You're crazy. This guy went along with me. And so he let me do whatever I wanted. Well, he's a dentist, so he's writing prescriptions. And, you know, we just have the whole thing locked down now. We have it all a great design. I wound up in my first treatment center. And in that treatment center, I went in and I told them that cocaine's my problem. I do too much cocaine. Third day I was there, I had a grand mal seizure. And I come out of it, and I'm like, oh, my, what happened? Like, all these people are, like, over me. I'm in my bed. The doctor's there. Everybody's there. And I'm like, what happened? And they told me. And I was like, how could that happen? And they said, well, there were a lot of things that you were taking that you didn't tell us about. And I was like, but I don't have a problem with those. That's how I thought. That's what I thought treatment was for, whatever your problem is. Anyway, I was taking a lot of Valium, a lot of other things. Anyway, I married that guy. And I got pregnant on my honeymoon because that's all I ever wanted, was to have babies and have the family that I never had. That drove me all of my life. I wanted to be loved because I didn't feel loved, and I wanted a family that I could, you know, be a mom. So I get pregnant, and this is 1984, and by then, we had decided that it was better to smoke coke instead of snort coke. So I'm sorry, I'm giving you the unedited version. And, well, I don't think that was better, okay? Because that was so much more intense, like my addiction just took on a whole nother level. So all of my life, I couldn't wait to get pregnant. And then time comes and I cannot stop. And so starts the secrets and the shame and the guilt and the fear. It was terrifying because for like 3 days out of the week, I'm getting high. Well, I'm not going to bore you with the rest. I had two. So he was born a little early, 1985. I had a daughter in 1987 and another one in 1991. And by the time I had that last baby, she was born at 7 months. She was in the hospital at 3 pounds. I never got caught, because I was married to a dentist. We were middle upper class. I could put on the face and act the part. I was a deviant. I was a piece of crap. I wound up in two more treatment centers right after. I spent my baby's first and second birthday in treatment, and every time I'd come out, I'd go back to the husband, and we'd get high together. 1993, for the first time, call a treatment center myself because I am sick of me. And I'm so sick of me that these kids should be taken away from me, okay? First time I ever called a treatment center myself, I go in, I go to a place, Arms Acres, up in New York City, and they say, you are chronic and you have to go to long term. So I say, okay. And today I know that was my first spiritual experience. I said, okay. I never said okay to anything. If it wasn't my idea, I didn't do it. And so I said, sure. And then I was like, who just said that? They sent me to Tampa. I spent 6 months, so 7 straight months in treatment. And at the end of that treatment, which was in August of 1993, I got out. I set up a home here. I brought my kids down. And now we're all going to live happily ever after. Wrong. I decided that I need to get that relationship back. So if you're new and you want to play around with relationships, I don't suggest it. I went out on that, hoping to get my marriage back, which was never really a marriage. We were two train wrecks, always. We should have never been together. And so my new sobriety date is somewhere, December 30th was the last time I used. That year I ruined everybody's Christmas. I went missing the day after Christmas. And didn't surface again until the 30th. By the time I came to, I was suicidal. I was homicidal, paranoid, delusional. I had never experienced all those things. And I swore that I just needed to die. I have never in my life felt that pain. Not ever, not since then, ever. And I've experienced some life. Being sober for 22 years. Anyway, I did what was suggested, finally. I have a sponsor. My first sponsor went out and got drunk. So I got another sponsor, and I worked my steps. And her name is Rose, and she's still my sponsor. I worked all those steps. I started sponsoring women at, I don't know, probably 15 months sober. They have saved me. I can't save myself. Oh, and that God that I hated. I have a relationship with God today that is, I can't even explain it. It's really weird. But like that hole inside is closed. I could be alone. I have somebody, I have a special guy that I met in sobriety. We dated for like 14 years. He was the smart one. He knew my history and he was like, oh shit, like what do I do with this one? Like, you know? The first seven, he wanted to get married, and the next seven I did, and then finally we were both on the same page. We've been together for 20 years, and we're married only five. Because we both work a program. We both do the deal. I take, this disease is so powerful, and I take my recovery so serious. Like, I could play around and joke around, but don't ever mess with my program. Because it saved my life, and it gave me the ability to be the mom I always wanted to be the wife I always should have been, friend. Like, my family doesn't show up like this. But this, you know, the women in the program show up like this. I have a life beyond my dreams. And since I've been sober, my dad died, who was like my knight. And because of this program, I was there for him. When my mom died, I was so high the night they called me, I couldn't even walk in the house. I had to keep my head down. And that was when I went to say my goodbyes to her. And with my dad, I practically lived with him for the last 2 months of his life. And I was right there with him when he took his last breath. And I administered all of his, the potent drugs, and never even once thought about using them. Those are the gifts. That I couldn't do on my own. I tried for a long time to stop using. I certainly tried when I was pregnant. I just couldn't because I didn't know that I was powerless. I thought it was just like I'm crazy and that's why I do this and now I can turn it off, but I could never turn it off when I wanted to. And there has never, ever been enough for me. Like, I'm the girl that always needs more drinks, more pot, more pills, more anything, whatever it is. If I ingest it, I need more of it. And that's how it was. Like, it stopped being fun years before, years. And I've done crazy shit. Like, I put a gun to my ex-husband's face. I just remembered that the other night because he was going to go to sleep and not go get me more stuff. And it's like, how do you do that? Like, you don't go to sleep, not when I'm here and I need more. And he was like, you're out of your mind. And I was out of my mind. I was completely insane. So when I worked these steps, it really, the first step, my life was so unmanageable, there was no question. Powerlessness, I finally got. That second step, like, I don't think I've ever been sane. I get sane moments and sometimes sane days. But I have to do this every day because I get insane very quickly. My alcoholism is live and ready to come out at any time, and I know that. So, like, if you knew, nothing I said hits you, then keep coming back and listen to other people. I heard my story here. I hear it more and more, and that's because I look for the similarities instead of the differences. I hate doing this, but I'm always happy that I did. So thank you all.